It's my honor today to introduce Jim Dodge, who is running statewide. He's learning how big the state of Illinois is. He is running for the office of state treasurer. Jim, as a Republican, it's a very great privilege for me to welcome another Republican to the stage. We've had actually a long list of Republicans up here. I was able, with my roots in Indiana, to invite Governor Mike Pence when he was governor. We've had Reince Priebus has been here. Paul Ryan has been here. And, of course, if you watch our Monday night commercials on Chicago Tonight, you know that President Donald Trump, before he was president, came to address the City Club of Chicago. Jim Dodge, our guest speaker this morning, he has a combination of private sector experience as well as elected public service. He's an innovator, and he's pushed to make government more efficient from his home in Orland Park. Jim's mother was an immigrant from Ireland who came to America in 1949. Jim's father was the son of German immigrants who came to America seeking a better life. Both of his parents were union members. He grew up on the southwest side of Chicago in the Brighton Park neighborhood, graduated from Kelly High School in 1980, and then while he was working at the local White Castle, he attended DePaul University. After graduating from DePaul, he began his corporate career, moved out to the southwest suburbs. He worked to earn an MBA from the University of Chicago with a concentration in economics and finance, and that's when he became interested in public service. At the age of 26, he became the youngest elected official in Orland Park when he defeated a 14-year incumbent who all local pundits thought was unbeatable. He was reelected in 1993 with 71% of the vote, and in 1996 was appointed a trustee to fill a vacancy. He was later selected by his colleagues on the council to be the mayor pro tem. Jim learned discipline and teamwork as a sergeant in the Illinois Army National Guard, serving in two units, the 178th Infantry and the 44th RAOC. You're going to have to explain. Okay. As a member of the Orland Park Board of Trustees, Jim has been a leader in the fastest growing and economically vibrant communities in Illinois. His 30 years of both private sector and public sector experience make Jim uniquely qualified to serve as our state treasurer. Jim is married, has two children, and one of them is here today, right? His wife. Linda. Big hand for her. Terrific sacrifice to be the wife of a candidate. I know that. Jim Dodge.
Good morning, both Frank and Jay. Thank you very much. Appreciate this. And thanks, everyone, for being here. Let's just kind of, jump into this. Hopefully, we can have a little bit of fun in the next few minutes. This is a great state. Illinois is a great state. And like you, I care very deeply about Illinois' future. And I'm hopeful. Now, that might surprise some people in the room, given the climate that we face from a political perspective right now. But I really do believe in Illinois, and I'm hopeful. When I say Illinois is a great place, I mean specifically the people as also the physical place of Illinois. Given our natural blessings, and we all know what they are, our location, our diverse people, a diverse economy, there is no reason we shouldn't be the leading state in the Midwest, let alone a nationally leading state. That's my hope. I know we can grow our economy faster, create more jobs, strengthen families, and create those conditions, right? As a small government, free market type of person, let's create the conditions for people to follow their dreams and prosper. The path for that future for all of us, whatever shape that takes, runs right through Springfield, and we're going to touch on that in the next couple of minutes. So as we go through this, I'd like to bring up some of the key questions, the key themes that we see in this election cycle. I'd like to build a case for change that we see both in my race, but also more broadly, and then my vision for the Office of Treasurer. I don't think anybody in this room will be surprised to know that I see things rather differently than my opponent, the current treasurer. So I'll apologize right now. I cannot help myself. I am a numbers nerd. I'll say it loud and proud. And we're going to have to touch on some numbers, but since it's so early and I don't know if there's enough coffee in the room, we won't go too terribly deep on those. Right? So I care about what happens in Springfield because those decisions in Springfield affect all of our lives. Right? These decisions have real consequences on real people. We're all living it every day for better or for worse. Now, as mentioned, I'm a native Illinoisan. Born, raised, educated, raising a family here, built a great corporate career here. I've seen it in both the city and the suburbs. And I've seen the best and I've seen the worst, right? I've been a beneficiary of the climate in Illinois where I could go to a DePaul and I could build a great corporate career, but I've also seen the worst. When I was at the aforementioned White Castle, when I was flipping burgers one night, 3 a.m, I unfortunately watched a murder, gun violence. So I was telling Jay, I have a passion. I'll come back to some of these other sessions. The system really isn't working for many people in Illinois, and I have a passion to try and find some way to help conclude that. And as my daughter can attest, more than a few times I've said, you know, Ashley, the system, the government, often fails the people who can least afford it. And we're going to talk about that as we go through these themes. It's one of my motivating factors. What I mean by that are the crushing tax burdens that we see. If you look at the burdens that people pay in Harvey, an economically stressed community, and you combine the local corruption with the corruption in the assessment value, those folks are literally paying some of the highest property taxes versus the home values in the state. That's not fair. It's not right. So government is failing those folks. All right. Let's also talk about a sad phrase that I came across years ago in politics, and it's no longer funny, especially since we're in Illinois, and it goes like this. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu, right? And so one of the passions I have is to make sure that someone is a forceful voice for the taxpayers. Right? Let's talk about the softer costs, because the people in Harvey and other communities that are paying too much in property taxes are being crushed by that load, which is largely driven out of Springfield. Let's talk about the soft costs. We don't deliver things well from the state of Illinois perspective. We all can agree, even this early in the morning, that zip code of a child should not be predictive of educational quality or educational outcome. Well, how does that happen? Those kids then might be sentenced to having a much tougher time for the balance of their lives competing in a global economy, right? So let's agree. It's not right for that kid. It's not right for the state. It's not right for our nation, and the system isn't working. So for decades, the burden of funding education was largely been pushed down to the local level by Springfield, even though if you read our Constitution, it sure looks like it should be a state burden. All the while, and this is the crux of what faces Illinois right now from a financial perspective, legislators have lost control of the pension promises being made at the local level. It gets sent to the state in terms of pension liability. Nobody's doing the math. That's how you wind up this far deep in the hole. So as I've told people across the state, literally top to bottom and east to west, there is a direct line between the property tax bill on your table and what goes on in Springfield. And for those who might, I'll recommend a great summary article on this topic that showed up in Crain's a few years back. And it's entitled, The Illinois Pension Disaster. Their words, not mine. What went wrong? And I'll give you a heads up. It spares no one. From Governor Thompson to the current governor, legislatures, all the people that have been involved in this, it is quite clear, very well done, strongly recommended that you read it. So as we kind of roll this back up to the election cycle, it's not just JB versus Bruce, or Democrats versus Republicans, or liberal versus conservatives. I really do sense, as Darlene and I, for example, have traveled around the state, it's beyond that. It's beyond the partisan labels. It's about the status quo and who will be the agent of change to save what I would describe as a great state. So other than all the caffeine we've had this morning, right? Why am I hopeful? Why did I run? You know, why do you take on a down ballot race like treasurer in what looks to be a very tough election cycle for Republicans? My wife, Linda, who we introduced early, insisted I had lost my mind when I agreed to this race. Just, you know, truth be told, little family secret, she insisted I had gone crazy. But she also knew I had to do this because I care and I really do believe we can make this better. First and foremost, the central theme that I think both Darlene and I and others are running on is we just have to start focusing first on public policy, not optics, not politics. Let me say that again. First and foremost, the central theme, let's focus on good public service, good governments, and let's get after what we need to do, not just the problems we face with politics. This is not a one-party issue. I refuse to stand up here and say, as a Republican, it's all the Democrats. I don't like it when the Democrats stand up and say, it's all the Republicans. No, both parties, in many ways, over the years, have accumulated this disaster, and now it's time to say, let's stop. Let's focus on some facts and let's start to fix the state. To quote Deming, some of you may know this quote, I love this one, in God we trust, all others must bring data, right? So that is a great quote, but for me it's a personal mantra. And while the numbers may seem cold, I'd like to scratch the surface a little bit and get behind them because there's people behind these numbers. There's real impacts about what these numbers mean, and they represent what is happening to the great state of Illinois as we try to create a better future. Some sad facts. If we did the accounting for Illinois like you do as a family when you go to get a home loan, or as a business when you have to report your annual results, Illinois is $200 billion in the red. That's net liabilities after assets, according to truthandaccounting.org, a source I trust, because those numbers are based on realistic assumptions and they're from comprehensive audited financials, which take, unfortunately, too long to get. So what is that? It's a combination of debt, unpaid bills, promised pension, and health care benefits. I was chatting earlier with the gentleman. Whose number do you use? $130 billion, $250 billion, $200 billion. I think $200 billion is a good round number. And that's just the state. So in order to avoid driving all of you into clinical depression before 9 a.m., I'm not going to start layering in all the debts and obligations from the individual units of government. My new favorite number, I promise you I was a numbers nerd, is $2.6 billion. That's the amount of penalty interest Illinoisans have been pre-committed to spend over the next 25 years. Let me get my facts right, 25 years, because of our bond rating. We literally have one of the highest total tax burdens in the country. We have the worst of all 50 states' credit ratings. So the penalty interest, the cost of incompetence, is $2.6 billion. So as I mentioned, let's put a human face on that one. What does that mean? The federal government just released $30 million to help treat the opioid crisis. If you divide $2.6 billion, and I'll recommend that you flip your cell phones on its side so you can get room for enough zeros. Trust me on this one. You divide those two numbers together, you're in the $100 million a year range. $100 million a year that's going to be spent on penalty interest. How many people could we treat for opioid addictions with $100 million? How many new schools where you might need a new school could be built? How many economic zones, how many economic incentives might you establish to help people who so desperately want and need a job to get out of their dire circumstances? Those types of things frustrate me, and as I promise, as a Republican or a conservative, you could often get labeled as just caring about the numbers and the math. No, those numbers and that math represents real impacts on real people. That's one of the reasons why I'm running. So why? How do we get here? Who let this happen, maybe, is the more important question. For decades, we all know this, Illinois has been run by special interest with the entrenched political machine. And I mean the machine. I didn't call out a party label, and I want to be clear about that. Special interests have armies of lobbyists, political action committees, mountains of cash that they spread around both Springfield and in Chicago. They're buying politicians, and they pay attention to those special interests. So every single decision over the decades made by Illinois government, I think, I passionately believe this, has been weighed first by political optics, political calculus, not public service, not performance, not the greatest good for the greatest number. The system is broken, and it's not just one party. It's not just one speaker or one legislature, one governor or one treasurer. Let me repeat that. It's not a one-party problem. It's across the system, and we need to change that. These impacts are devastating. And so, again, referencing Darlene, as we've traveled around the state, when you talk to average Illinoisans and you ask them what's on their mind, taxes become first. But more importantly, it's trust. People lack faith that the state of Illinois will actually try and make rational decisions and heal in a civil, compromise, compassionate sort of way. And that's one of the things that I think that that drives both both myself and other candidates to do this, right? We mentioned the $200 billion. We've talked about the economic environment. We all know about the Illinois exodus. The Tribune has been quite forceful in saying we are driving people away. Well, Milton Friedman, I think, once said, there's nothing more mobile than the wealthy other than their capital. Well, when that money starts to leave, who pays the price? It ain't, with all due respect, J.B. Pritzker and his level of folks. It's the people who need jobs that work for other folks that create value at a local level. That's how this cascades down the hill, and that's one of the unfortunate pieces about what we're doing. And you know, with my last name, I've had more than a few jokes on the campaign trail about automobiles, so here goes, right? It's just, if you look at what we're doing, one of the highest total tax burdens in the country, worst possible financial conditions. So, we're paying for a Ferrari, state government delivered a Yugo. Everybody remember the Yugos? Worst car in the history of the world, maybe other than the AMC Gremlin, right? And so that's unfortunate because, again, back to my central theme, the people who can least afford to be failed by the systems are precisely those that the system fails. So speaking of this, could a J.B. Pritzker or even a Bruce Rauner afford, air quotes, a mileage tax? Sure. Can the middle class and the working class, especially out in rural areas, afford this? Hell no. They're taxed enough already, and that's driving some of the anger and the frustration in the vote base as we've gone around and talked to folks. Illinois should be a land of opportunity. We're in a great location in the country. We have amazing natural resources, world-class universities, best, hardest-working people in America, and despite what I hear downstate, Chicago is a great city. Born and raised here. You know, it is to quote Jim Edgar, it is an economic engine for the state. So we all need to be mindful that we're in this together. We are on the cutting edge of research and innovation. But despite all of those advantages, and that's not a complete list, ladies and gentlemen, we're falling farther and farther behind. It's clear in the data. We lag in so many areas that there's simply not enough time for me to cover them today. But one of my favorites is the Case-Shiller Index about housing prices. After the Great Recession, the laggard is the Chicago area. So of the 20 major metropolitan areas in these United States, the one with the slowest climb out of the hole in terms of property values is Chicago and the Chicago area. Why? It's the economic climate. It's the conditions that we face broadly in Illinois. Let me say that again. It hurts the working class and the middle class disproportionately, and it doesn't have to be that way. It's not going to change, however, until we start holding more people accountable. We need reform-minded public servants who will put the needs of the people they represent above the wishes of the party bosses. I can't say it any simpler. You know, you grow up as just an average kid in the southwest side of Chicago. You see how the system works, how it doesn't work. You build a great corporate career. You become good at math, courtesy of the University of Chicago. It's like, this is madness. We have to stop. We have to start changing. We simply cannot tax our way out of this hole. You simply can't do it. I've joked on the campaign trail, Warren Buffett himself couldn't invest out of the pension hole that's been dug for us in Illinois. So we need to fix this. We can't keep kicking the can down the road. Now, many were shocked in some recent press reports that former governors are talking to future governors and giving advice. I'm not shocked. Basically, if they have a business or personal relationship, of course those conversations are going to happen. But what I think goes missing more broadly in this political climate is just an honest, fair discussion, first starting with the truth. Let's get the facts on the table and then hack it out. My vision for the office is clear. I simply want to do the job of treasurer. I'm asking to be hired to do a job, and my commitment is to do that job. So there's four big pieces that that we're focused on. One, let's consolidate this office with comptroller. I'm going to go through these in a little bit more detail. Let's make sure that all of our money is working as hard as it could be. I'd like to focus on the core responsibilities of the Office of the Treasurer, and to be quite blunt, I'm going to stop trying to find new ways to make the office more politically relevant by seeking programs just to have more touch points. It's a very simple office. Let's stick to our knitting, if you will. And I want to be a forceful voice for the taxpayers in Springfield. So let me take you through what I'm thinking. So consolidation. It's been a hot topic for a while. Now's the time to do, not just say. No more meaningless gestures. This could not be more straightforward. Right? Create a thoughtful plan, trust the taxpayers, done. One constitutional officer directly answerable to the people of Illinois, so you have a constitutional officer check and balance in the system, millions of dollars saved. There should be no resistance to this, but there are folks who resist this. Well, they bring up issues of, well, in the 50s there was fraud. Sure there was. And I have a background in data analytics technology. We didn't mention it in my bio. I have a U.S. process patent for doing time series analytics. I'm pretty sure we can figure out exactly what we need, where the money is, and then render it out to the press and render it out to people very simply so people see and you mitigate the risk of fraud. I call it a meaningless gesture because a number of people voted for this in the Senate, knowing, in my opinion, full well, Speaker Madigan was just going to let it die in committee. That's a meaningless gesture. It's too easy to vote for something and say, we're going to save $12 million. All the senators pile on, Madigan puts a brick on it. That doesn't help anybody. We need to stop those things. So I'm going to continue to push for this, be a forceful opponent. My opponent, current treasurer, has mentioned a number of times that he wanted to do consolidation, but his version of consolidation is different than what Darlene Sanger and I are running on. We would like to build a plan, take it to the taxpayers, have a vote, and get on with it. My opponent basically said, no, blow up the comptroller's office and give it to me. Well, there's a difference here, folks, right? Let's trust the taxpayers. Why is that so important? I'm reasonably certain that we cannot save the state of Illinois with $12 million a year savings. Would you guys agree we can't save Illinois on $12 million? The real point is we're signaling to the taxpayers and the voters of Illinois, we trust you to tell us exactly what you want. We're going to learn. We're going to shrink government. We're going to try to do this more efficiently. So ultimately, the reason I'm so passionate about consolidation, it's an act of trust in the judgment of the taxpayers once they've been given a thoughtful plan. Excuse me. Making the money work harder. Illinois has roughly 700 funds. I think it might actually be closer to 800 funds. 800 separate funds. I've been working fairly hard, but I've yet to find a lucid explanation as to how an entity that is this much of a financial disaster has 700 funds. You just will not find that. And you've heard this from other sources, and I'll use round numbers because these change constantly. The total assets we have at the state of Illinois is $14 billion. So the state of Illinois has $14 billion worth of money splashed across these 700 funds. That makes 2% interest. You've heard that the returns have increased. Yes, they have. Thanks to the Federal Reserve, interest rates have been going up. So, of course, our portfolio has returned. Right? That's not necessarily a great accomplishment. Illinois, conversely, also has $7 billion of unpaid bills. So keep those two numbers in mind. $14 billion in across 700 funds, $7 billion in unpaid bills. The penalty interest on that $7 billion is anywhere between 9 and 12% a year. Now, I don't know if you come across this. I've yet to meet the family. I've yet to meet the business in Illinois that would do that to themselves. $14 billion making 2%, $7 billion costing you 12. And now, and I'm not quite sure if I wanted to call this Bizarro Land or the Twilight Zone, only in Springfield would everybody celebrate using some of that $14 billion portfolio to buy our own debt so you could theoretically increase the return on the money you've been sitting on for years that we're making 2%. Well, I'm glad we're doing it because technically portfolio returns have gone up. How on earth do you justify this from a simple sanity check? The fundamental question has to be, and this is where leadership in the Office of Comptroller Treasurer comes in, why don't we just have an honest political conversation? Why are we sitting on $14 billion? with $7 billion worth of unpaid bills, but we can magically tap into it to buy buildings or to loan ourselves money to goose, theoretically, our portfolio returns. Can't you just draw down the portfolio and pay off the bills? The rest of us in Illinois, we live within our means, right? We live within our means. And I think that I'm touching now on a key point that a number of us have seen with taxpayers. Why can't the state live within its means? And this is just an absolute symptom of what's part of the problem. I mentioned earlier, I'd like to focus on the core duties for the Office of the Treasurer. In the Constitution, it's very, very simple. You're the safekeeper of the monies, you invest the money, and you do other duties by law, and you work closely with the Comptroller's Office. Over time, that's expanded to investing money for local governments, got it, 529 and unpaid properties. Fair enough. Let's stop there. Let's focus on the performance and not the politics. We have 200 billion reasons not to trust the state of Illinois with another penny of our money until they start managing it well, but that's exactly what's happening. There's now various programs to offer Roth IRAs to individuals through the Treasurer's Office. At the Tribune editorial board, my opponent talked about the need to help people save for retirement, but that the big money firms wouldn't touch it. Okay. Tell that to your local banker. When I've spoken to local bankers, they said, Jim, if somebody comes in and with all the automated banking that goes on now in terms of paper checks, we're more than happy to set up an account, do the deduction, establish a Roth IRA. Tell it to Fidelity. One of the biggest money managers on the planet, they just started a program, zero fees, zero minimum balance, and zero cost mutual funds that you could buy. There is literally no need for the state of Illinois to have this program in the Office of the Treasurer. Now let's separate out the policy question of, do you want to help people who are in a certain circumstance save for their retirement? Of course you do. But if it's that important to you, mandate it on the private sector, since there's low-cost options, get it out of the way. It should not be in the Office of the Treasurer. I see this as a blatant attempt to make an office which is functional. It should be focused on performance, not politics, trying to become relatively more consumer-friendly, so to speak. There's been improvements over the years through a number of treasurers on unclaimed property, but there's a lot more that we can do. I'm not quite comfortable with the need for the people of Illinois to have to ask the state treasurer's office to return what is rightfully theirs. If you look at the state of Wisconsin, they do the work. They do the math. They send you a check for anything under $2,000. Now, I'll tell you a short story. I've got 5 or 6 unclaimed properties with the treasurer's office right now. It could be $3 dividend checks. Was a $22 AT&T rebate. Apparently, I didn't fill out the postcard for. So I went through it, and the state's pretty simple. The same James Dodge has been paying taxes to the state of Illinois from my address for 18 years. It is child's play from a technology and an analytics and a data basis to then say, I'm going to just send Jim Dodge's check. Other states do it. We need to start doing more of that. My vision, let's just accelerate the return of other people's money and making it easier. The last thing Illinois needs is more money under management in the treasurer's office, which quite frankly helps fund that office. If you look at some of the details in the state budgets, not all the money comes from a general revenue source. It comes from the fees with all that money under management. There's also a move to accelerate when something like a simple bank account might be reported to the treasurer's office, where the state could theoretically get it earlier as unclaimed property. So it may eventually make its way back to you, but why on earth would the state of Illinois treasurer's office want to interject itself into the relationship between a bank and an individual when you set up a CD for a grandkid, a nephew, a neighbor, or whatever you want to do, and you just let it cook? Well, everything's fine. It's not unclaimed property. We should not be there. So I just want to be very declarative. My vision for this office is to do the job of treasurer, tightly defined, to focus on performance. And I'll start to wrap up with voice of the taxpayer. I apologize to some of the people in my campaign, but when we started this, I have a penchant for trying to create visual images. And I said, do you guys remember the Dr. Seuss book, The Lorax? Everybody know that book? Little guy pops out of the stump, and he says, I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees. Well, I said, one of the things I'd like to do is I'd like to be the treasurer. I speak for the taxpayers. So that's kind of one of the, if you can hold that visual for a second, he has a mustache, the Lorax does, but I shaved that a long time ago, right? You know, I've long held that politics in its purest form is a contest of ideas. It's battles over policy. how best to do the greatest good for the greatest number are absolutely what we should be doing. Unfortunately, pure partisan power plays get in the way, and I know the taxpayers need a more forceful advocate saying, this is what's happening to your money in Springfield. Like with consolidation, I think we can save money, and I think if we render to the people a simple understanding of what's going on, we could get there. We don't do this right now. And the transparency efforts you see at the state, with all due respect, as a technologist and a data person, they're nice evolutions from prior. In fairness, we have to give them credit. But it's not just about any one year's budget balance. You can't have charts with no scale that show a line increasing and say, this is how I'm showing you growth on investment return. Other states do it far better, where you could click in and see exactly how much it costs you to run the office of governor, exactly how much it costs you to run the office of a comptroller or treasurer-like position. Those moments of clarity for voters are going to drive better decision-making. I have zero intention, because it's not the office of treasurer, to take policy stands on whether or not a policy is right or wrong. That's a legislative and governor's issue. Somebody needs to put the numbers to it. Somebody needs to make those numbers real, verifiable, and make them easy to understand. The people of Illinois are not stupid. They're frustrated with what the system has been doing, and they'd like to know what happens. Nobody did the math, in my opinion, on the pension holidays or the ramps or the budgets that will never work. Budgets that will never work because the deal falls apart with the ramp, for example, or assumptions that were never going to happen are made implicit in a budget document. In my opinion, current treasurer spoke out about the budget only after it was passed, and he basically promptly went on to blame Governor Rauner for all the faulty assumptions. I'm reasonably certain Governor Rauner wasn't the only one who was making those assumptions. That was a legislative matter. To my central point earlier, it's not just a one-party thing. We need to get to a better place in Illinois. Numbers don't lie. They can be tortured into confessing whatever you'd like, but numbers into and of themselves don't lie. So it's entirely possible that I might not be the most popular guy in Springfield or even in my own party, but I feel passionate about this, which is why I took on this race with the support of family and friends, and I'm appreciative of that. And a closing point, the McCurran treasurer went on national television, CNBC, did a number of interviews where he took Facebook as a corporation to task for all manners of things, whether it was Russian hacking or it was other issues related to the election. Well, that's just great, but I would never represent myself, one, as an institutional investor who has a position in Facebook, which he did, when we do not. Let me be clear. The state of Illinois' investment policy is restrictive. We can only largely invest in high-quality government short-term securities, which is a good thing. We don't hold equities in the core funds. You hold equities in the pension, but you don't hold equity in the core funds. So to get up and represent that felt like pure gamesmanship, pure politicking. I would never do that as treasurer. So again, focus on the core competencies. I don't see this as a stepping stone. This is not a way to enrich myself or my family, and I'm not interested in making this office more powerful or politically relevant. It's here to do the job. On that note, it was interesting. At the Tribune editorial board, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact quote, they introduced themselves, and if you can picture this, I wound up in the middle with the current treasurer on my left and a libertarian on the right. It just sort of felt like that's kind of how we were on the political spectrum, so not quite sure how it looked for the Tribune. They said, we're going to skip the opening statements. Let's go write the questions. And, oh, by the way, we don't believe that either the office of treasurer or comptroller should be elected. It should just be a functional office. Boom. Here we are. We went at it for an hour. And so those are some of the issues that we see. And I took that as, one, thoughtful on behalf of the Tribune, but also, quite frankly, it gets to the central point. Illinois government is bloated. Illinois government is efficient. Illinois government wastes money. They don't know what they're doing. Highest total tax burden in the country, worst possible financial condition, and that's not accounting for all the damage done to the local entities. So as we close, you've heard this. I mean, I know the struggles of working families. Been there, done that. My parents never owned a car. We literally went everywhere on what my mom used to affectionately call the big green limousine. We took the bus everywhere. But I've had a great run in the state of Illinois because what Illinois represents is potential to the individual. I come from humble roots. I care very, very deeply, hopefully you sense that, about making government do its job well. I've got a record of doing this in Orland Park, and a little-known fact, myself and the then mayor, Democrat, we worked across the aisle. We got rid of a level of government. There's a number of townships have this position called township treasurer of schools. By referendum, we got rid of it. It's probably putting at least $500,000 a year and has been for decades now right back into the schools because the schools can manage their own money. I've got a record in Orland Park of trying to make government more efficient for one very simple reason. I think government has lost its moral authority to keep asking for more money because of how poorly they've managed all the money we've given them thus far. That's a driving motivation for me. So my expectation is to keep raising my voice, not to be combative, not to be partisan. It's fact-based. You know, a better speaker than me said, the truth will set you free. Well, let's get after that. I've seen the best and worst from the state of Illinois. I'm very blessed to be here where I am. I know I did not get here alone, and I want to work as treasurer to give back to the people of Illinois, to a state and the people of Illinois, so much that it's given me. So with that, thank you, God bless, and I'd love to take some questions.
I'm Amanda, the executive director of the City Club, and Barry, we'll start with your question. What can a fiscally responsible Illinois treasurer do with an Illinois Democratic majority to minimize the 50 years of Democrat financial incompetence and ease the crushing tax burden on Illinois taxpayers?
Well, there you go. Okay, so do we have an hour? Because that's a great question. Do we have an hour? I'm kidding. First and foremost, it's some of the themes that I mentioned, which is take the simple act of consolidating your own office. When Darlene and I first started talking about this, people would look at us, who's going to lose their job? And I said, it's okay. We'll go back to the private sector, right? This is about serving the people of Illinois. So consolidation sends a big message. I firmly believe that if more people knew the simple connection between what happens on your taxes and the decisions that are happening in Springfield where they're not doing the math, more people would take different actions in any given November. My theory is that if people knew the truth, they would not have kept the current political class in place. So one, you shrink it to try and reduce the office, have a reason to do less taxes, but also just get truth into the system. These two positions, comptroller and treasurer, are meant to be fiscal officers, right? It's not a policy position, but I think you can be a passionate advocate for truth, and hopefully people take better decisions. The pathway to this fix goes through the legislature and the governor's mansion. Right. And so you need someone, a constitutionally elected office, to keep banging the truth because the system needs to be held accountable.
Great. Okay, this question is from Paul Liberté. Did I butcher the last name? Okay. How, as treasurer, are you able to consolidate or reduce the 700-plus funds Illinois has?
I think ultimately it would be a legislative prerogative to do the funds. I mean, I want to be very respectful of the branches here. And I think a thoughtful discussion of why that does or does not make sense. One of the things that I didn't mention in my presentation is Illinois' essential balance in the bank has not moved all that much from the $12 to $14 billion range for years. So while we've been racking up these deficits and these unpaid bills, we've been sitting on a pile of cash that's not making a whole lot of money, but everybody congratulates themselves, on a few dollars we make in interest. So I think that the pathway here is back to financial literacy, advocacy for we don't need 700 funds. They're often broomed in a financial crisis. During that budget crisis, both sides, all branches, were looking at essentially $4 billion of underutilized funds to try and solve the crisis. Let's go upstream a little bit. Why are you sitting on $4 billion that's unused? And so it's in these offices, the technical defines of the office, I think we need to focus on telling people what's going on and get them to pressure, quite frankly, the governor, whoever that is, and the legislatures.
Great. Anyone else have questions?
I'm ready. Can I just say
it? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So would you implement, as chief financial officer of the state, which is this role, would you implement sending a notice to each pension beneficiary each year disclosing the proportionate expected payout of their respective pension based on what is funded in disclosing the portion of their expected benefit that is not funded?
I would, because I think that the people who have been promised these benefits did their job. If you talk to a teacher, if you talk to a cop, you talk to a fireman, you talk to a state worker, they've made their contributions. I'd argue that the people who were running the money did a good job running the money. I'd argue that the actuaries, for the most part, did the math that they were ordered to do by the state legislature well. What happened? Springfield decision makers did not put in the expected contributions, based on what they had promised. So to your point, and back to my idea that a rational discussion for all of us, pensioners, people who are going to get those benefits, they have a right to know as well. We expect their voice to be heard as part of this dialogue. The pressure point has to come back to the people in the legislature who are underfunding these benefits or coming up with benefits that are simply unsustainable. So if I understood your essential question, I would absolutely advocate that those people who were promised benefits and have been making their contributions, they too have been failed by the system, just failed differently. We need to get the truth on the table. It won't be a pleasant conversation. It will be combative. You would expect people who were promised benefits to fight like hell for what they perceive as their right. We, the taxpayers, also need to say, and we were all underserved, horribly underserved, by the people who are making decisions in the legislature. The only way we're going to solve this as a broader community, if you will, people in Illinois, get the facts on the table and start what I hope is a fact-based, purer conversation about how to solve a problem.
Quick question.
Sure.
41 days till the election. Are you going to have a debate? When will that be?
I've asked for three, and here is the answer we got back from my opponent. And, you know, it's like, you know, like I said, I've met Mike Ferrix on the campaign trail. We were doing a parade in Evergreen Park. I've met him at the debates, and by reputation from the legislators that I know, he's a decent man. So this is not, hopefully, none of the thing, everything I said today, this is not the classic ad hominem attack. I'm not attacking Mike Ferrix as an individual. He and I just see the world very, very differently, as you might expect. He and I have very, very different visions for an office and very different visions for public service. So I'm happy to engage in those types of dialogues and have those conversations, but so far, no response. So the only debates we've had have been in front of the Sun-Times and the Tribune editorial board.
Okay. We've got a great question from Darlene Sanger, who will be here next Tuesday, October 2nd, so I hope you come back for breakfast. Okay. Two parts.
Okay.
What is the fastest you've ever drove on Illinois 55 while on the campaign trail? And how many miles have you traveled since you started?
I'll take the second one first. I'm kind of cheap. And so as Linda can attest, I have a 2004 Ford Explorer. And when we started this campaign trail, it had 211,000 miles. And I could happily show you the picture of my odometer. We just now, got to almost 240. So we'll call it about 30,000 miles. And you get used to driving Illinois because that's the only way to run statewide. The fastest I've ever driven, I think it was, quite frankly, trailing and trying to catch up to Governor Rauner in a state police escort in a rainstorm going between Metropolis and the DuQuoin State Fair. So we were north of 80. And I'll admit that now only because we do not yet have tracking devices in our car to measure either speed or mileage. But, hey, that's a little political shot there.
Any more questions? All right. Well, Jim, thank you for being here today. We got a couple